Welcome to another episode of Masked Monologues, the anonymous podcast dedicated to creatives. Each week, I dive into conversations with a diverse array of creatives from various industries to explore their unique processes and stories. If you're enjoying the show and want to support us, please consider leaving a review or sharing it with a friend.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Masked Monologues. Today, I have Peter Banico here with me. He's going to tell us a bit about who he is and what he does.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show. Thank you. So, if I'll just go straight into the introduction, my name is Peter Banico. What do I do? I am a tech entrepreneur, so I have a business which helps businesses do more with technology, and also a pod which helps businesses also learn more about technology, do more with technology. And how did I get into that? Let's go back to 2006. In 2006, my mom got me a laptop. I was really young back then. She got my first laptop. And I've always been this very DIY, curious person. So I just really got into the laptop, how it works and everything. In 2010, I started my first business, which was a web hosting business. And in most sense, say, your first business most times doesn't work. But for me, it worked. And I think that was fortunate. That was lucky. But it made me feel more confident, feel like a magician. And because of that, I started starting multiple businesses after to a point. At 2018 or thereabouts, I had about 4 businesses running at the same time. But the thing, the one common trend within all those businesses was that, like, one of them was a food business. I didn't know how to cook. I don't know how to cook till dates, but it was working. So the one advantage I had in everything I did was that I knew about technology. I knew how to use technology to have an unfair advantage over others in these businesses. I was able to use adverts, to use SEO, to use different things that people in those industries either didn't know about or were using. So while I was running those businesses, I used to have a lot of people come over and ask me, okay, why? How do you do this? How are you getting an advantage? How are you doing this? How are you doing that? And I realized, oh, wait, this is the one thing that's consistent in all these businesses. So that's why when in 2018, I launched Target ICE, because I realized, okay, you can actually charge people for answering these questions they're asking, and then launch Target ICT. And yeah, that's how I got started. Basically, in a nutshell.
Okay, so you say you started off with a web hosting business, and I'm just wondering, web hosting, that's similar to like with Wix and like other companies who allow you to build a website, or is that just like web hosting where you buy a domain and you purchase that domain and you allow other people to repurchase the domain, or what exactly is a web hosting business?
Okay, so I think web hosting, the best way I like describing it is to have a website online, you need 3 components. First of all, you need a designed website. Then you need, which is what people would see. Then you need a domain name, which is what you give to people to find the website on the internet. And then the third thing is that you have the hosting space, which is the web hosting. So the hosting space is just basically hard drive space on a server that we sell out to people so they can save this designed website in that host space and point the domain name they bought to that hosting space that way. So when you have those 3 things, you have a website online. So what we're selling was basically the domain names and the hosting space.
That's nice. I'm wondering, how did you acquire all this knowledge about tech? Did you go to a tech school, or did you go online, do some research? Did you enroll in some courses? Or how would someone who might be interested in tech but not know how to learn more about it and get into the industry try and break through?
Okay, so I think getting into tech, I've seen a lot of people try different things to get into tech. For me, it was just curiosity and being interested in the tech field, because there are a lot of times who want to say, okay, you want to get into tech, you go into, you take a course. So I remember there was once I wanted to learn a programming language, I took a course, and I think that was the worst thing I ever did in my life. The course kept taking me through definitions. I think it was on this, that was many years ago. So I wanted to learn PHP. So rather than teach me PHP, you kept telling me the definition of PHP hypertext processor. This was invented by this. And after a month, I didn't know how to code a line in PHP. But the programming, when I finally learned all this the programming languages I know, how did I learn them? I basically had a problem in front of me. And then I was able to go to the documentation of the programming language and try to figure out how to solve this particular problem I had with that programming language. And I've seen that's the best way to learn anything. That's the best way, because a lot of times when you go for a course or that, you get trapped in theory, you get trapped in a lot of knowledge that you don't really have any way to practicalize. But when you go learn by doing, yeah, that's the word. When you learn by doing, you're able to retain what you learned better. You're able to do more. You're able to think. You're able to think through problems. And when you think through problems, then you have a deeper knowledge of whatever you want to learn. So I think that's the best way to go into tech. Have the interest, be curious, and try to learn by doing.
No, I love that piece of advice. Now I'd like to ask you more about the details of your business. So I've had a lot of entrepreneurs on this podcast, and I've noticed that the majority of them have been B2C businesses, so business to customer, consumer businesses, but you seem to be a business. So yeah. Is acquiring clients like, because you're approaching other entrepreneurs, other maybe startup businesses and companies who are just building their businesses? How do you appeal to them instead of appealing to just an individual or a direct consumer?
Yes, I think that's a good question, because previously, most of the businesses I had before Target ICD, practically all of them were all B2C businesses. And there was a reason for that. I used to think, I like using that statement, I used to think I was an introvert, so I didn't want to really talk to anyone on the phone. I didn't want to come on video. I didn't want to be anywhere. I just wanted to create a product, put up a website, have people buy the products, and nobody knows who I am, or nobody knows who is behind the products. But when I got into B2B, this B2B space, that's with Target ICT, I realized it was totally different, because you could do adverts. Buying behaviors in B2B are totally different from buying. It's humans that buy in both of them. But in the B2B space, the products, the ticket size, the purchase size is usually bigger than in the B2C space. So people usually take a longer time to make decisions, unlike B2C, where people usually buy on impulse. So I realized that in the B2B space, I would have to actually talk to real people. And that was really hard. I think I did a bit of practicing that. I joined Toastmasters a couple of years ago. I'm able to talk freely and all that. Have conversations, sales conversations, normal conversations, and everything. I think getting clients in the B2B space, I think it's basically ad work for that. You do adverts, but knowing that the adverts, it would usually go through a longer buying cycle, then a lot of it is outreach. A lot of it is outreach. Then part of it too is you have inbound processes, inbound strategies. So some of them are having optimized articles. You might think, okay, what do people in this space, what do people who need my product, what are they going to search for on the internet, links to this product? When you think of that, you make either articles or videos on those things that they'll search for. So once you publish those articles or videos and they go online and they see your articles and videos and they see that you know what you're talking about, they see that you can solve their problems, they are more likely to work with you. So those are different strategies for getting clients B2B.
Can you speak about some things you've worked on specifically with clients in the past? Has it been mostly SEO, search engine optimization on websites and for blogs, or have you delved into a plethora of different tech-related products or solutions for these companies?
Okay, we don't really do SEO for clients. We basically do it for our own business, our own marketing and all that. What we do, because for me, personally to me, I don't think SEO is, it works, but it takes a while for the results to kick in. That's the first thing. The second thing is that it's dependent, the results are dependent on a lot of other external factors. So you might be doing the right thing, but an algorithm will change, Google will change something, and all your work is gone in 10 minutes. So we don't do that for clients. What we do is basically, I can use an example to illustrate this. One example, back in, I think around the pandemic time, there's this textile manufacturer had offices, operations in three countries. So they manufactured in one country, and sold into other countries. Then the management team was spread across the three countries too. But the issue now with this company was that they used Excel sheet and paper for their records. And the issue with using Excel sheets and paper was that if someone in a different country wants to know what's happening, they would have to wait for the front desk, the sales, the manufacturing, everybody to gather their paper and their Excel sheet together and move that sign probably a week, 2 weeks, a month, probably before anyone knows, okay, what's up with the company, what's going on with this company. So I met with the managing director of the company. His father is the founder. He was the managing director. He talked to me about the issue and I was like, okay, I think we have a solution for this that will make this easy for you. And what we built for them was an interface. It's called an enterprise resource planning platform. So what it basically does is that on that one interface, all the accounting is handled there. So any sale from any end user or wholesaler is entered there and it's updated immediately for everyone to see. It handles their CRM. So any customer outreach, any customer care inquiry, everything is in that same system. Their inventory, once the manufacturer ships out the textile rolls and everything is inputted there, once it's sent to the different warehouses, it's recorded. Once it's sent, sold out to end users or to wholesalers, it's recorded. So once it's recorded, anyone anywhere in the world will be able to see what's happening. It had HRO, the HRO component, so leaves, payroll, everything was handled there. So that you're able to take your leave, you're able to handle reimbursements, able to handle assets given to maybe telephones or whatever, given to different staff members, where your computers, your desks, whatever, are at any point in time. If they move from this point to this point, you enter it in the system and it's all recorded there. So they just had one login, one system, one web page, web portal, and that solved everything. So if the founder or the managing director or any of the management team wants to know what's happening in the company, they just have to log in and they see everything real time compared to having to shuffle and struggle and waste so much time trying to gather all the documents, all the records together.
I guess burning question for me as someone who's not tech savvy or wouldn't consider myself to be up to date with all the tech terminology, with how a lot of the systems work, how do you go about creating a program like this? Because it seems a bit complex. You have to have all these entries and then you put them in a system so it's all in one system. So you open it up and then you can access the inventory, you can access the customer outreach, you can see the accounting as well. So how does a company like yours go about setting up the system? Do you do a lot of programming, a lot of coding? I'm not sure how it works, but if you could fill me in.
Basically, when you look at it, I think the programming, the coding is actually the last part. And for me personally, I think it's the smallest part of it. Because for me, coding, programming is just basically, for me, it's just translation. Translating an idea human has into a language a computer will understand. That's all I see coding as. Most of the work is done before the coding part. So let's take this same example. After they had the complaints, I had to work with them for about a week, go just walk around with the managing director, see how they do their things. He just told me the entire process flow. I took a lot of notes of how the products are manufactured, what units, what size units they use in selling, importing them. Then when they break them down, how they break them down, how many yards or meters are in a row. Then he told me what issues they were having with the employees. Why that HR part was added was because sometimes maybe they give a phone to an employee and it goes missing and they can't remember who they gave it to, something like that. So I just took note of all the problems. So the first step is understanding the problem, understanding the most painful and most important part of the problem, I say. Then when you understand it, then you think of a solution. At this point, you're not even thinking of code. You don't even care about any code. So you think of a solution. Think of the best way to create a solution for it. So it takes a lot of process maps to say, this goes to this, and this goes to this, goes to this. So you do a lot of them there and all that. Then when you have an exact idea of how thing is going to work, then you're now going to the design of the program. So designing of the program is basically you just how it's going to flow. Okay, if someone logs into here, access is the person, okay, the owner of the company, what is the owner of the company going to be able to see? What a floor, a warehouse staff who logs in going to be able to see? What's a customer care officer logged in going to see? So you're going to be, you would outline what you're going to block, the different access levels, I'll use the terminology, the different access level that they are going to have. So once you outline everything, then you now design the difference, and you're not really, they call it wireframing. So you won't design the entire screen. You just have an idea of the login screen goes to dashboard. Dashboard has a link to HRO accounting, this, the CRM, whatever. Then you now say, okay, if you go to HRO, it goes to this. If you go to CRM, it goes to this, this. So you do all these things. And when everything is done, they now do database design. The database is basically where information is going to be stored. So there are basically two types of websites. There are websites that are static. Once you publish the websites, they are like that changes. Then there are the websites that have the databases. So that's like Facebook, Twitter, and co. So they are created. And if people make changes, the website changes with the changes that people make. So that's how the database. So the next thing, you design the database. Design a difference, what is going to be in the database, how those different things in the database are going to relate to each other. So once everything is done, the wireframing, the database design, the process design, you've solved all the problems away from code, then you start coding. At that point now, once you start coding, that's, you're not really thinking of the problem, you're just translating the problem into what your computer is going to understand so it can output that website. So that's the thing. A lot of times, people think it when you code, you just go straight to the code. But for me, I feel 80% of the work is done before you ever open any coding window.
Okay. Oh, thank you. That broke down the process into bits and pieces. And that was great. I got a better understanding of it. Now I want to ask, how long does it take to do all this? And about how many people does it involve? Because the majority of your process, you're spending a week just walking around, seeing how the company works. And then from that point, you haven't even gotten into the code or the embellishments. You haven't done the design. So how long do these projects usually take you?
Yeah, I think that project in particular took about 8 months because it was actually in there. But if it's probably maybe a website or something we're building, yeah, that'll take much less because that just needs information and translating, like I said, translating the information into what the computer would understand. So that took about 8 months. That took a lot of this thing because we needed the front-end designer. We needed the PHP programmer. We needed a lot of people working together to make it work. But yeah, so that was actually a really in-depth, a really complex, not really complex, but at least took more complex than.
And as the owner of your company, how do you find the right people for the task and how do you manage them? So to make sure that they're staying on top of work, that you're not running behind, that everything is running smoothly for you internally so you can provide a better product to other businesses.
Yeah, I think as the owner of the company, most of what I do, especially these days, is quality control, because if the output is bad, I'm the face of the company. I'm the person probably everybody talks to. I'm the person who everybody needs to blame. So most of what I do is quality control, a bit of project management, making sure because I'm really into productivity a bit. So a bit of project management. So how I make sure everybody is on top of their tasks, on top of what they are meant to do every twice a week, beginning of the week, end of the week. Starting end of the week, we plan, okay, what did we achieve this week? What are we going to do next week? And okay, I think I even have a personal goal planning. I don't know if it's a show here. A personal goal planning sheet here. So each week, personally, I have 3 goals I have to achieve. And those 3 goals are divided before the week starts into what I'm going to do on Monday, what I'm going to do on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, to achieve those goals so that by the time the week starts, I'm not really thinking of what I'm meant to do. I'm just executing on each of the goals I have to achieve. So that's what we basically do. We have checklists, we have to-do lists. We have our project management tools. We have, because one thing I believe is that the brain is meant for processing and not for storage. So most times, all those things I have to do, all those things we have to do, I like putting them on external software, on external checklists, on external project management tools, so that you wake up in the morning, open up your tool, and you see all you have to do. So you don't really have to remember each thing you have to do. All you have to do is just, okay, I'm meant to do this by this time. You work on it. Once you're done, go to the next one, you work on it, and you're ticking it so that whoever is managing you or whoever is expecting results from you can see that you're doing what you are meant to do. And if you're not, you can always, okay, send an email or send a Slack message or send or just touch base with you and say, okay, are you having any difficulties? Or is there anything wrong? So that way we are able to each day know what we are meant to do and be on top of what we are meant to do every day. I think it's just basically having systems around it.
Yes. And for someone who started up a lot of businesses, because you have done B2C businesses, and you said you even did something with food, can you tell me a couple of tips that you've learned from all your experiences? Maybe it was just persevering or getting the right people, maybe outsourcing earlier. I've heard that for some companies. I just want to know what works for you and what could be applicable to others.
I think the first lesson I learned after my web hosting business, the next business I started was a grill, a food business, and it failed immediately. I wasn't around to manage it. Why did it fail? Because I didn't have these systems I just talked about. I didn't have this process around it. So it was dependent. The business functioning was dependent on me location every single day to supervise what they were doing, to check what they were doing was right and all that. So I learned that lesson. But when I started the food business after that one, this one had processes around everything. So the recipes, the preparation in the morning, the cleaning of the outlets every day, we had printed sheets on how to do that. So when you wake up, you check me, you check under the wind seals, check here the recipes, if you're preparing this, half a tablespoon of salt, a liter of water, just follow, put this on the fire for 5 minutes and this and that. So all that was written down in this third food business, and it made it really easy to operate, because I didn't even know what was happening. I just knew that everything, as far as everyone followed the rules, that the processes that were there, the food, the taste of the food was going to be consistent in all locations, the ambience, the kind of music that was played, the cleanliness, everything was just going to work. And that's what something I really learned. Systems and processes are really important, especially if you want to build a business that's going to grow bigger than you, that's going to have many branches, that you're not going to have to supervise personally. Then I think the second lesson I learned building a lot of businesses was focus, how important focus is. Because like I mentioned, at a point I was running 4 businesses at a time, and now I have just one. And the reason for that is I realized I was spreading myself too thin, because these businesses were unrelated. They weren't, it wasn't a case where maybe this business feeding the other. No, they were totally unrelated. There are things I started because I felt I just have this confidence a lot of the time. I can do anything I put my mind to. So that's basically the reason I started a lot of those things. And I realized that when you look at it, starting one thing, keeping one thing alive, keep making one business thrive is actually really difficult. So now, at that point, I was doing 4, and it really showed on me. It really took it all on me, because as at that point, I wasn't healthy at all. I didn't really have time for myself. I didn't have any leisure time. I used to get to my office by 6:30 every morning. Even on weekends, I won't get to my house till maybe 8 p.m. at night every single day, even on public holidays, everything. I didn't have time to work out. My blood pressure was high at that point. I was overweight. I think I was about 50 pounds, 20-something kilos heavier than I am right now. So those are the things, because I was trying to juggle so many unrelated things together. But I realized when I moved over to just having one business, is putting all my attention, my effort, my resources, everything in this one business, I've realized that at the end of the day, I have more money coming from business to me than I did when I had 4. And it's actually something that's surprising. That's the first thing. Apart from that, I have more time. These days, I only work from 8 till 4, 8 till 5. I don't work on weekends anymore. 8 till 4, 8 till 5, I'm done. And that 8 to 5, I, done everything I have to. These days, I have time to go to the gym. I go to the gym 3 times a week. I didn't have that time. I couldn't even imagine myself doing that back when I had four businesses at the same time. Yeah, so many things have changed. I have leisure time. I have time to actually think and unwind and have hobbies. So I think focus is really important. Focus helps you do a lot more and better.
Yes. No, I've heard a lot of people who do 10,000 things and then you're just dividing up your attention. So not everything's going to be exceptional because you just don't have the time to give everything 100%.
Exactly.
Yes. I want to thank you so much for coming on this podcast and speaking about what you do. It was very informative and I believe my audience will love this information and be able to apply it to whatever they're doing. I want to ask, do you have a website, any social media platforms, an email, any place my audience can contact you and say hi or just ask about what you do?
Okay, so I think I said I was an introvert, but I think I'm still a bit of that, so I don't really want to update with media. I think my Instagram was last updated maybe 2 or 1 day about 3 years ago, but I think the only two places that I really update my LinkedIn accounts. So LinkedIn Peter Banigo. I'm the only Peter Banigo for now on LinkedIn. So I update my LinkedIn at least maybe once, twice or thrice a week. So I think it's a bit more current than anything else. Then apart from that, the other thing I update is my podcast. So I have a podcast, Tech Your Business. So just basically showing people how to use tech to do more in their businesses. Anyone who wants to hear more from me every week can go on techyourbusinesspodcast.com.
Okay, thank you so much. And if you like this podcast episode, please do get in touch with Peter. Go check out what he does. If you want more episodes like this, please leave a review and share it with a friend or family member. And we hope to see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Masked Monologues. Don't forget to like and subscribe. See you next time.